Alright, so holding on Lamed Hey on the days, seven lines from the eight seven lines from the seventh line of the wide line. We started learning yesterday, so to recap, the Mishnah talked about a case where somebody does chalitza, or another case is somebody does yibum with the yavama, and it turns out she's pregnant. So then we have two possibilities. Either the baby is viable, survives for 30 days, or not. So we say that we had a couple of possibilities. If the baby is non-viable, the chalitza turns out not to have been a chalitza. The yibum turns out to not have been if the baby is non-viable, the chalitza turns out to have been some kind of chalitza, because in the end the brother-in-law didn't have a surviving child. The yibum turns out to be some kind of yibum. Whereas if the baby is viable, then the chalitza wasn't really a chalitza and the yibum wasn't really a yibum. It can actually, well, not aishas ish, it can be aishas achid, rather, but yeah. That's why the Mishnah had said, for example, that baby ended being chayv and a carbon. But then the Gemara started discussing the point.
What happens if it is viable?
Afterwards, then we said they'd be chayv and a carbon retroactively, because they were also to each other from before also, because it turns out she's aishas achid. There's no question they're going to have to divorce. That's the Mishnah said. Yeah, because as long as he survived for 30 days, then at the time when they got married, yeah. We'll get to more on Mamad, but yeah. Anyway, so then we started discussing Machloikas. We had Machloikas, Rabbi Yechon, and Rish Lakish. What happens? He does chalitza to the woman when she's pregnant. Later on, she miscarries. So obviously, there was never a viable baby. Was that chalitza valid or not? We said Rabbi Yechon says that she does not need any more chalitza. The chalitza, even though it was done with her being pregnant, is still valid after the fact. Whereas Rish Lakish says that not, because Rabbi Yechon says basically retroactively it turns out she was able to have chalitza, and Rish Lakish says not.
It's
sort of face value. Where there's a couple of different reasons why. We said one reason is because he says based on the pasuk. The pasuk says ayin, and the pasuk says ubein ein loy, that he doesn't have children. If an ayin all of you have to check into it, and in this case they obviously didn't thoroughly check into it, basically. But also the Gemara had mentioned a svara. Well, Bain means Bas. I mean, it doesn't matter. Bain includes Bas for this purpose. That was the famous argument of Benoit Slocha to Moshe, that they argued to him that if only sons can inherit, then that means our father died without, children to inherit him. In that case, our mother should do Yibum. Whereas if we're considered children as far as Yibum, that our mother isn't a Shemeres Yavam, then we should be able to inherit too.
So what is the Torah saying?
Bain is a generic term meaning children. We're going to learn later on that it means it can mean children, it can mean grandchildren, it can mean great-grandchildren. Remind me, by the way, afterwards, if we have time, I'll tell you a fascinating thing that the Meiri explains about the story with Shlomo HaMelech and the two women. So remind me about it. Anyway.
Regarding
what was going on over there, what happened in that story. Rish Lakish just says in the Gemara that we don't say retroactively that she turns out to have been kosher for Yibum. We say, you know, that we have to look at the, you know, at the time she wasn't. There's a few different explanations that Mepharshim say why not. One idea is because at the time, after all, she wasn't suitable for Yibum. Fine. It turns out afterwards the baby was miscarried, but you didn't know that at the time. A few different possible reasons. Anyway. So we're going back and forth. We went back and forth with questions that Rish Lakish is asking on Rabbi Yechon, and Rabbi Yechon is asking on Rish Lakish. That's where we're holding. The line begins Reisha, the seventh line of the wide line. Eisper Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish. So Rabbi Yechon asks on Rish Lakish the following question from our Mishnah. We said Ein Avlad Shokha Yama Yukayin. We said if they had done Yibum and it turns out the baby is non-viable, then he's allowed to stay married to her. So according to me, Rabbi Yechonon would say, I say that the chalitza with a pregnant woman is considered a valid chalitza. Ubias mu'beres shma bia, and the bia with the mu'beres for yibum is considered valid bia. Mishmachi katani yikayim. Well, and therefore he did a proper yibum, so therefore he's allowed to stay married to her. El lidach damet chalitza mu'beres lo shma chalitza, ubias mu'beres lo shma bia. According to you, you're saying the chalitza was not a chalitza. If they did yibum, it's not a yibum. What do you mean yikayim? What do you mean he stays married to her? The Mishnah should have to explicitly say he has to have relations with her again to do the mitzvah of Yavama Yavayalaha, and only then he's allowed to stay married to her. According to Rish Lakish. And the answer is exactly, that's exactly what it means. My Yekayim, that's exactly what it means. When it says he should stay married, it means not just he could stay married if he wants to. It means he has to. Yachzav Yivol V'Yekayim. He has to have relations with her again, and then at that point stay married to her. Or, I mean, at that point he could divorce her if he wants, but the point is he has to stay married long enough to have relations with her again. Delay Sagi, because otherwise it doesn't work. It's true, according to Rish Lakish, it wouldn't work, because at that point no Yivum has been done yet. The Zika still exists. Ikadamri, others say that the discussion went the other way. Esfir of Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yechanan. And according to the second version, on the contrary, Rish Lakish is the one who asked on Rabbi Yechanan from a diuk in the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Ein Avlad Shokha, the same clause in the Mishnah, Ein Avlad Shokha Yom Yekayim, that if the baby is non-viable, then you can stay married. Vishleim Lidididam, in a chalitza's Mubera Slash Machalitza, Ubias Mubera Slash Mabia. So, okay, if we say the chalitza wasn't a chalitza, the bia wasn't a bia, Hainer Katani Yekayim. Which means, as we said, it doesn't just mean he can stay married, it means he has to stay married, at least long enough, yachzav yivol v'yekayim, delay sagi v'lav achi, it's impossible otherwise you haven't fully done the mitzvah. Ela didach, but according to you, Rabbi Yechanan, you say the yivum has already been done. Well then, what does it have to say? Yekayim, which implies that he has to stay married. Rotza yotzi, rotza yekayim, Yibayla, it should say, if he wants, they can stay married, if he wants, he can divorce her at that point, once he's done the mitzvah of yivum.
What's the mitzvah yivum? It says Yibum is not only to marry her, to have children from her.
No, well, yes and no. I mean, first of all, it could be that she became pregnant from him already at this point. But second of all, it's neither here nor there. I mean, the Torah, remember, we said in the second parak, we said on the Chavdalid, that when the Torah says, it doesn't literally mean that she has to have children in order for the Yibum to have accomplished its purpose. I'll pick up all that. Yeah, there's the idea that the children, that the first child they have will be the we said that this way they'll have, the brother will have somebody who yarshins the property that otherwise would have gone to him, but that's what we said. For example,
he
that even
to do yibum for that,
he does only if he does yibum is he entitled to it.
Understandably.
Okay, no, I'm saying obviously there is the reason of Kabbalah, the idea that the child is a gilgul of the neshama of the brother who died. But talking strict halacha, if they don't end up having any children, if they just had the bia once and then that's it and then they divorce, he still accomplished the mitzvah. She's still potter. She's still able to go and marry out Lashuk and go marry whoever she wants afterwards.
But Yeved, in other words. Lechatchila, if he marries and he doesn't want to have children, did he accomplish a real Yibum?
Apparently, yes. That's what we're saying. Yeah.
That's a crazy.
Maybe it's not the best possible way of doing it, but he has accomplished the basic mitzvah.
Of marrying her.
Of marrying her, yeah.
But he didn't build a house for his brother.
He built the house by marrying his wife. That's
the
yeah,
way you
yeah.
Understand.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, let it say that at that point, once Yibum has been done, if he wants, that he can stay married. If he wants, he can divorce her. And again, the answer would be similar to the one we had yesterday. Einachinami, I did his hundred reisha yoyti. Since the previous part of the Mishnah said that if the baby turned out to survive 3 days or more, then they have to divorce because then there's no choice. He married Eishes Achiv, which is illegal. And then he definitely has to divorce her. Tananami Sefer Yekayim. So fine, for parallelism, the Sefer mentions Yekayim, even though according to Rabbi Yochanan, strictly speaking, that he wouldn't have to divorce. He could divorce her. If he wants to, he could stay married. There's no obligation on him at this point. According to Rish Lakish, you have to say Yekayim because at that point, when she was pregnant, before she miscarried, no Yibum has been done yet. Maybe the Gemara asks, I have a contradiction. The Braita says, if a person marries his Yuvama and it turns out that she's pregnant, her tzara should not get married to somebody else. Shema Yehei Vlad Ben Kayama, because it might turn out that the baby that the Yuvama is carrying, that she's pregnant already with from her first husband, may turn out to be viable. Wait a minute, that doesn't work. And I don't have a Vlad Ben Kayama, Mr. Tzarasa. Just the opposite. If the baby is viable, then the tzara automatically is potter, because then the Och had brothers, had children. Once he has children, even from one of his wives, all the other ones are automatically potter. In fact, they're also to do Yibum, and they don't need Chalitza. Of course she'd be potter if the child turns out to be Ben Kayama. Okay, you have to correct the wording of the Mishnah, that it might be the child may turn out not to be viable, and then meanwhile this Yuvama will have gotten married to Shuk, which she's not allowed to. Now, the point of the question, if you're going to tell me, like we're saying, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that the Bia with the Yuvama is considered a valid Bia, it's considered a valid Yibum, So what's the problem? Amayla tinasi tzarasa. Why can't the tzara get married after the yibum has been done? Tipati rabia shachaberta. Her tzara, Leah, for example, has done yibum automatically. Therefore, Rachel was potter, according to Rabbi Yechon, and that the yibum was a yibum.
Tzara did yibum.
Then she can marry whoever she wants. Yeah.
She's potter.
Yeah. So that's a contradiction to Rabbi Yechon. Amar Abaya, you're right. The bia kolam le pligid le potter. When it comes to the bia of yibum, everybody agrees, even Rabbi Yechonan, that in fact it does not potter the tzara. Because the fact is, she's pregnant at the time. You can't be sure that the bia was a valid bia. It might have been a bia of mitzvah, or it might turn out that it was a bia of eishes achiv, which is an iser. Ki pligi b'chalitza. So the machlokes, unlike what we were saying until now, the machlokes is both about yibum and chalitza. Now we're going to say the machlokes is only about the chalitza aspect.
Okay, yibum.
Then we have a problem from this b'raisa, because this b'raisa is implying that the tzara can't get remarried. Wait, we're going to talk about it soon. We're going to have a different explanation of Rava, that no, we can keep the original wording of the b'raisa and explain it differently. But meanwhile, according to Abaya, we're saying since the b'raisa seems to be saying that once that Rachel has done yibum, but what seems to be a yibum, but yet Rachel, the first wife, has done what seems to be yibum. She's the one who's pregnant, but yet Leah has to wait getting married until it turns out what happens, whether Rachel is pregnant or not. 90 days.
90 days.
Not 90 days. 90 days is to be able to tell whether she's pregnant in the first place, as well as to be able to tell whether she's pregnant from her first husband or the second one. Here we're just talking about 30 days from the birth, or yeah. So she has to wait. The tzara has to wait. So that's a clear contradiction to Rabbi Yechonan. So now we're saying that yes, Rabbi Yechonan would agree. Rabbi Yechonan would agree that the bia with Rachel does not pater Leah, because the bia of Rachel is still questionable. The machlokas is about chalitza. Rabbi Yechonan sava chalitza smoberes shma chalitza, bia smoberes lo shma bia. So Rabbi Yechonan holds the difference. Chalitza with a pregnant yivama is considered a good chalitza, but bia with her is not. Rish Lachar sava bia smoberes. Loishma bia, but chalitza is more better. Loishma chalitza, and Rish Lakish holds that everything is no good, neither the bia nor the chalitza. Because we're going to say in a second. Amalei Rava Manavshach. So Rava asked him, what's Rabbi Yechonan's logic? E bia is more better. Shma bia, chalitza is more better. Shma chalitza. If the bia with her is a good bia and it accomplishes yibum, the chalitza should also be a good chalitza. The e bia is more better. Loishma bia, chalitza is more better. Nami loishma chalitza. They should go together. Deha kai malon, because we already have the established idea that we said at the beginning of the Masechta, the kala oila liyibum oila lachalitza, any woman who's capable of doing yibum, meaning that the yibum, that the bia actually passes her from any further need for yibum, oila lachalitza, then she can also perform chalitza. V'chol sheino oila liyibmein oila lachalitza, and if she can't go for yibum, she can't go for chalitza. So the two things are interdependent. So Rish Lakish, we understand. Why, if you're saying, Abaya, you're saying that Rabbi Yochanan is distinguishing between yibum and chalitza, why? Where does he get that from?
Rish Lakish, we're not.
That's the Rish Lakish, it seems fairly obvious. But where is Rabbi Yochanan getting it? Ela Amar Rava. No. Hachi Kama. We have to understand the braisa that we quoted as follows. Hakonis Yuvimta. A person marries his Yuvama. V'nimtas Moberes. It turns out that she's pregnant. Harezu lo tinase tzarasa. Then indeed, we're saying her tzara should not get married. Shema Yehe Vlad Ben Tayama, because not like we wanted to change the wording of the braisa before and say in case it turns out the child is non-viable, in which case the tzara is not potter. On the contrary, no, the tzara should not do anything yet, should not remarry, because it may turn out that the child is Ben Tayama. And Ubias Moberes Loishma Bia, Vachalitza Moberes Loishma Chalitza. And indeed, let's say, according to everybody, even according to Rabbi Yechonan, we would say that the bia is not a good bia. The chalitza is more beres loishma chalitza. The chalitza was not a chalitza. So the tzara still can't get married to anybody else because she's still a shemeres yavam. She still has a zika. Because v'avlad ain't a poter ad sheyetsa l'aver olam. Because in general, a child does not pater his mother or any of her tzaras from yibum or chalitza until he actually is born. So when he's in the womb.
We're talking a situation where he's not born.
Yeah. So therefore.
Until he's born and 30 days pass.
No, because, well.
Because we still don't know if he's viable.
No, but the point is, well, okay, but there actually can be certain cases where you know immediately on birth that the baby is viable. For example, I'll tell you. Nowadays they would use what Apgar scores or whatever, but in Gemara terminology, it would be suppose that her first husband, the brother who's now dead, had relations with her, and then let's say went on a trip. Then 9 months exactly later, the baby is born. You know for a fact it was a full 9 month pregnancy. So therefore, even right away on birth, you can assume that the baby is viable. But even if you knew that, even if you know for sure that this baby is definitely...
You don't have to wait 30 days?
No, in that case, you don't have to wait 30 days.
So when do you have to wait 30 days?
In a normal case, where you're not sure. I mean, usually, you know, couples have relations all the time. You're never exactly sure what the, you know, I mean, nowadays, maybe, I guess, with pregnancy calculators you are, but in those times, not necessarily do you know exactly to be able to know the exact date of conception. So, even nowadays, it's a bit of guesswork, yeah. So therefore, you never know whether it's really full 9 months, whether it's maybe born in the ninth month or in the eighth month or whatever, which then we learned in Shabbos, the baby has a chazaka being non-viable, et cetera. Yeah. So even if we know for a fact the baby is viable, even if we have, like we said yesterday, even if Eliyahu Navi were to come and tell us, I have my ultrasound, I see that this baby is or isn't viable, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. This baby still has to be born for any of that halacha to take effect. And in fact, we learn a braisa which goes according to Rava. Hakonis yibim te benim tesmo beres. A person does yibum with his yibama, and it turns out she's pregnant. Harezo lo tinasi terasa, and her tzara should not get married. Shema yehev lad ben kayama, because the child might turn out to be viable. The ein bia b'chalitza poiteres ela vlad poiter. In this case, the bia or the chalitza themselves would not be what paters the tzara. It would be the child who paters her. And the child does not pater for anything from chalitza or yibum until he's born.
Let me ask you a practical question. That happens today. To know whether or not she's pregnant, she needs a pregnancy test. Can we rely on a pregnancy test?
It's a good question. I don't know.
Or we force her to wait.
I think in general they still force them to wait. I was mentioning yesterday, not yesterday, actually this morning when we learned the makeup for last night, that when a woman is misguided, they make her wait 3 months. I was saying it's only in a case where she's married to a Jewish man already, but actually I was wrong about that, and it's across the board. We always make a Giyardis wait 3 months to marry, whether she's pregnant or not, even if she's never had relations before, because rules are rules, basically. Yeah, we never know.
And that would apply also to the Yivamta?
So Pashtas, that would apply to the Yivamta as well.
Even if we have a test, it's
important. So if we have a test, we know she's pregnant. Okay, we know she's pregnant. Well, then in that case, maybe with a Chumra, we would say then in that case, you should wait with Chalitza or Yivam until we see what happens. Yeah. But here we're saying the nimtzis more better. Here we're talking about, for example, you know, he did Chalitza a month after her husband died, for example, and then 2 months later she starts showing. Yeah.
But that's what I was saying. Before he marries her, he does Yivam.
No, so yeah, I'm saying if we know already at the time that he's doing chalitza or yibum that she's pregnant, then of course, you know, the beis din shouldn't allow him to do that until we find out what happens, until we find out whether she has a baby and whether it's viable or not.
That's what my question is. Would the beis din order a test of pregnancy? And
I don't know. Good question. I mean, nowadays it's very rare to do yibum anyway, as we talked about before. We'll have more on that Flama test, but yeah, anyway. Okay. I don't know. So what's the point? Taima d'shema yehev lad ben kayamahu. Which let's reanalyze this last braisa then. What are we saying? Why should the tzara not get married? Because the child might end up being a ben kayama. He might end up being a viable one. Ha lo yehev lad ben kayama mifta tzarasa, which implies that if he turns out to not be viable, then the tzara is potter because he already did yibum with the child's mother. Well then, lema tevit yupta de Rish Lakish. In that case, that seems a clear contradiction to Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish is saying all this time that bia smu beres shloshma bia, according to everybody, according to the first version of the Gemara, according to the second version, according to all the different versions, Rish Lakish always holds the bia is not a bia, so it shouldn't pater even her, let alone her tzara.
The fact that it's not a bia means she has to wait.
So then, if the braisa is saying, if the braisa is saying that. So what is the braisa saying? Why shouldn't the tzara get married? Because it might turn out to be a vlad ben kayama. But suppose we had the ultrasound, we knew that it's not a vlad ben kayama, the braisa would be implying that, yes, the bia with this woman would pass to her tzara. Well, according to Rish Lakish, why? That's the question. Amalach Rish Lakish. So Rish Lakish will answer you, hachi katani. Let's re-explain the braisa yet again. Akonis yubimte v'nimtis mo'beret, the person marries his yuvama, she turns out to be pregnant. Harezu loyti nasi tzarasa, so her tzara should not get married. Shema lo yehei avlad ben kayama, because the child may not turn out to be viable, like we said before, like a buyer wanted to, like the Gemara wanted to initially change the wording of the b'raisa. And so the chalitza or the bia will not have been a good bia. So therefore, the tzara may not be potter at that point. The b'raisa is implying, you might ask, why do we need to worry about that? Most women give birth to viable babies. So shouldn't we go according to the chazaka that probably the baby is going to turn out to be viable, and then the yavama will be potter? But nevertheless, you can't say that because Vlad ain't poter at Shiyet Lavra Olam, because still the child does not pass to his mother or his mother's tzaddis from Yibum until he's actually born. You have two things, in other words, the Baita is implying, according to Rish Lakish. Number one, there's the possibility he may turn out to be non-viable, and in that case, the Yibum was never a Yibum, and in that case, both of them are still Shomeres Yavam, and the Yavam or one of the other Yavam is going to have to do Chalitza or Yibum with one of them. Number two, that even if we were to rely on the chazaka, or even if we had the ultrasound, if he is viable, nevertheless, he still doesn't pastor anybody until he's actually born. Yeah. But therefore, so you have to wait until he's born and until you figure out
him. Because you have to know for certainty that he's viable or he's not viable.
Yeah.
And before that, anything is not viable.
And before that, that's what the chazaka's saying. Everything, yeah.
Amar
Rabbi Elazar. So now Rabbi Elazar thinks to himself, is it possible that Rish Lakish is saying this idea, and we don't find it anywhere explicitly in a Mishnah, or not explicitly, at least implicitly? I mean, we went back and forth whether our Mishnah, whether the wording of it more supports Rabbi Yochanan or Rish Lakish, but apparently Rabbi Elazar wasn't satisfied with that. If Rish Lakish is taking this position, that Bias Moberes Sleshma Bia and Chalitza Moberes Sleshma Chalitza, which is kind of a chiddush, we've never heard of that before, there has to be something about it in the Mishnah. And in general, we know that we learned back in Tainis that Ilfa had said that he has the ability to, and, you know, you tell him any braisa, you can find the source for it in the Mishnah. And the same thing with the Gemara. Everything that's in the Gemara is implicitly somewhere in the Mishnah. So, yeah.
So we have to be able to find it.
Nafak Dokva Ashkach, he went out of the Bismedrish and checked carefully into it. Rebbe Lazar. And he found something. We learn at the end of the Masechta, if you have a woman where her husband and her tzara went overseas, so the woman stayed home, her husband and her tzara left, and people came and told her your husband died, so she's not allowed to marry and she's not allowed to do yibum, until she finds out whether her tzara is moberes. So let's consider. Bishlam Yibumi Loy. I can understand why the woman who stayed home, let's call her Rachel, why she can't do Yibum at this point, Shemi Yehi Vlad Ben Kayama, because it may be that her tzara is going to end up having a viable baby. And then if she does Yibum with one of her husband's brothers who's back home, that brother is going to end up being over on Isur Daraita, Veishas Achiv. Ella Loy Tachloy Tamai, but you have to ask, why shouldn't she do Chalitza? So, let's consider further. Bishleim etachlis b'tzoich tes v'tinasa b'tzoich tes loy hainu safik. Okay, I can understand why we're saying that within the 9 months after they went overseas, she shouldn't do chalit, or within the 9 months actually when she got the news, rather when at that point we know her husband's dead, we know her tzara is not becoming pregnant from him anymore. So fine, during that 9 months, we're not going to say she should do chalitza during the 9 months and then be able to marry somebody else also within that 9 months. Fine. Kind of suffix, because that's the whole point. You have the suffix. Why don't we say that she should be able to do chalitza within the 9 months and remarry after the 9 months? Obviously, if we're saying not, must be, because if she does chalitza during the 9 months, that won't work, which is exactly what the Shlokish is saying. The Shlokish is saying chalitza is more better. Well, in this case, it's slightly different, because here it's not the woman herself who's doing chalitza, it's pregnant. Here it's her tzara who might be pregnant. But yeah, same principle. Same principle applies, yeah.
Right. Sarah might be pregnant.
Right.
We don't know.
We don't know, and therefore we're not even going to allow her to do chalitza now, even if she's then going to wait until after the 9 months before she marries. So Rish Lakish, so we see that we can be medayit from that Mishnah that we can be dyke from that Mishnah, to apply it to our case over here and say, yeah. However, the Gemara says, according to your own logic, tachlis v'tinasa l'achates. So why is the Mishnah B'chlal saying that she has to wait until she finds out whether her tzara had a vlad ben kayama? She should be able, after the 9 months, she should be able to do the 9 months, she should be able to do the chalitza and get married after the 9 months, because whichever way you look at it, if the chalitza is a good chalitza, then she can get married, and if her tzara had a viable baby, then she didn't need chalitza, she can also marry whoever she wants. So either way you slice it, she should be okay.
And the Mishnah should say,
The Mishnah should say, after 9 months, she's free to get married. Ella barmi nodahi. So no, rather, you can't really, you have to exclude that one. In other words, you can't really prove anything from that case, from that case in the Mishnah. Because the Abaya bar Abba or Rav Chinuna bar Abaya de Amitavayu, because these two Amoraim, Abaya bar Abba, or it says here on the side, Ovin, Rav Chinuna bar Abaya or bar Ovin, whatever, de Amitavayu, both of them said that the Mishnah is talking about a case like this. You know why you don't want to allow her to do Chalitza, just in case she needs it, and then get married after the 9 months, that is, Shema Yehei Vlad Ben Kayama. What happens if it turns out that her tzara had a viable baby, a baby who survives for 30 days or whatever, v'nimtza ata matzricha kruz l'kuhuna. And then what's going to happen? She did chalitza, but it turns out that after the 9 months, let's say, or even during the 9 months, that's the point. We can't really prove anything from this, because whenever she does chalitza, it turns out later on that she had, that her tzara had a baby. It turns out the chalitza was completely unnecessary. But what's going to happen? People, in order, now what happens if she wants to marry a kohen? You're going to have to make an announcement that her chalitza was never really a chalitza, and that she's allowed to marry a kohen.
How could she marry a kohen if she's got a viable baby?
No, no, not she. Her tzara. And first of all, what's the problem? If her husband died, she can marry. No, the point. In other words, you have Rachel is the one who stayed home.
Right.
Leah is the one who went overseas. She's the one who we don't know whether she had a baby or not. If we later on get news that Leah had a baby, we're saying that Rachel's chalitza turns out not to have been a chalitza at all, because it was totally unnecessary. No, but no, one second. A chalitza midrabanan is offered to a kohen, but in this case, the chalitza was no chalitza at all. So in that case, she would be mutter to marry a kohen. But how is she going to be mutter to marry a kohen? Only if you make an announcement about it. And that's the problem.
That
it was never a chalitza. You're gonna have to go and put up on you're gonna have to put up notices and say that Plinus plus Plinus had chalitza, but the chalitza turns out to have not been a real chalitza. That it was never needed. And what's the problem? The Gemara asks, "Well, it's chalitza. Okay, so you require it. So you set up a website and then publicize it. What's the problem?" The answer is, you might have somebody who was present at the time of the chalitza and does not hear the announcement afterwards and is not present when they make the announcement. What's going to happen? Later on, he sees that this Rachel marries a kohen. He's going to think, oh, a chalitza is allowed to marry a kohen. He's not going to realize that the chalitza turned out to not be a chalitza at all.
Even when there was an announcement?
No, it's not so far-fetched. I mean, so you might have people who are there for one thing and not there for another thing. Okay, so he might assume that's just it. We're saying that we see that the rabbis are allowing chalutza to marry a kohen. Apparently, this zera de nabon is not a particularly strong zera.
And because of that,
So we're saying we can't really prove anything from that Mishnah. The reason why we're saying she can't do chalitza in that Mishnah is not because we're saying she has to wait till after 9 months to do chalitza. Whenever she does chalitza, whether it's during 9 months or after it, you have this problem that people are going to think that chalitza is allowed to marry a kohen.
No conclusion.
So you can't prove anything from that Mishnah.
Okay.
Yeah. Amalei Abaya, but Abaya asks on this, what do you mean? Midi lo tachlitz lo tisyabim katani. The Mishnah over there didn't say anything about she can't do chalitza and she can't do yibum. The expression is lo tinosif lo tisyabim katani. It said she can't get married, meaning to somebody outside the family, and she can't do yibum katani beloy chalitza, which would imply that she can't do anything unless she does chalitza. But in fact, the implication of the Mishnah is fakir, the exact opposite of what we were saying. If she were to do chalitza, then she's mutter.
Even during the 9.
We don't know whether during the, no, maybe not during the 9, maybe, but at least after the 9, at least after the 9 months, which, whatever, maybe during the 9 months even. The point is that we see from it, we're not like we were just saying that we're afraid to allow her to do chalitza because of this problem of achraza. No, evidently the Mishnah is implying there's no problem of that. All it is she does need chalitza before she's allowed to do anything else. She can't do yibum because her tzara may have had a viable baby. She can't just go marry out lashuk because she may in fact need chalitza. But the Mishnah is implying she needs to do chalitza, and then fine, she can go do whatever. The word tinase implies to marry outside the family.
Right.
And jisyavim implies it means to do yibum. So she can't do those things, but she could do chalitza. So you can't really prove anything from that braita anyway. Maybe even, if she did chalitza during the 9 months, then maybe even we would say, like Rabbi Yochanan before, that chalitza is more better than shmo chalitza, and therefore it's fine. You can't prove, because the Mishnah is not really saying anything about before 9 or about during 9 or after 9. However, Tanya Kava said the Rish Lakish, we do have a braita that goes according to Rish Lakish. The braita says, a cholitza the moberes v'hipila. If somebody does chalitza with a pregnant woman and then she miscarries, tzricha chalitza min ha'achen, then she needs chalitza from the brothers, which we said yesterday, a few possibilities, whether that means any of the brothers, including this one who did the original chalitza to her, or maybe it means only any of his other brothers, or maybe it means all the brothers because of the chalitza psola, whatever, all the different possibilities, but whatever, she still does need some kind of chalitza. V'pila, and she did chalitza with a woman while she was pregnant. Then she miscarried, so it turns out that the dead brother didn't have any descendants after all. Well, if she had had a viable baby, then no chalitza or no yibum would have been needed. There's no zika at all. But because in the end, and conversely, if she hadn't been pregnant at all, then of course you can do either chalitza or yibum. It's a straightforward case. The problem is she was pregnant.
She had, right.
So at the time of the chalitza, we didn't know if she's going to end up having a baby or not. And the braisa is saying that she needs chalitza.
Not nothing.
Maybe that's what we said. The different possibilities. But at least Rish Lakish would say she does need chalitza again.
Okay.
That chalitza that she got while she was pregnant, when we didn't know how things are going to turn out, doesn't count. No, not necessarily. Well, it could be either way. It could be that she was, it could be they knew already she was pregnant, or it could be he did chalitza and then it turned out that she was in, and then she started showing. Yeah, either way, it doesn't really matter.
Why?
Because Rish Lakish has been saying all this time that the chalitza that's being done while she's pregnant is no good. It is no good because we don't know whether it's going to turn out she's going to end up having a viable baby or not. And if she does, no chalitza was needed. She needs chalitza from the brothers, which we said, I mentioned yesterday, three possibilities among the Farshim, whether it means that any of the brothers, including the original one who did chalitza, can do chalitza again, or whether it means any of the other brothers except for him, or whether it means all of them need to because it was a chalitza psula, and So that braisa directly says what Rish Lakish is saying. Amar Rava, and so Rava says, Hilchasa kavaseh de Rish Lakish behani tzlas. The halacha
from Rish Lakish, you know, I mean...
Rish Lakish is not murdered. He can't make a braitzah. If there's a braitzah, it has to be from before. Tanya Kavaseh, Omar Rava, Hilchasa Kavaseh de Rish Lakish Bahani Tlas. The halacha is like Rish Lakish in the following three dinim. Usually, when we have Machlokes, Rabbi Yochanan, and Rish Lakish, most of the time the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan. In the following three cases that we're going to list, the halacha is like Rish Lakish.
There was
a discussion about it in Shabbos, actually. I don't know, in Erevin, but in Shabbos, actually, there's a Tosfos in Shabbos versus a Tosfos in Zvachim that talks about whether this rule that we're saying over here, the three, is an absolute rule, or maybe does it only apply to halachos that apply nowadays. If Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, we had in Shabbos, argued about a case of whether a person is chayav chakas or not in a certain case, does this rule apply to that as well? Chada hadamara, number one is the one we just said, this case of chalitza when the woman is pregnant.
And the halacha
goes like Rish Lakish. Idach titna, number two is we learn a Mishnah in Bava Basra that goes as follows. Hamachalik nechasav apiv. If a person, before he dies, hands out, he gives out his property verbally. In other words, normally you would have, you know, I don't know how it works. I don't know exactly how it works in American law. If a person dies, what they call intestate, without leaving a will, I'm not sure what happens to the property. Well, the government takes a nice hefty chunk of it, but besides that, I'm not sure what they consider who the default heirs are. In the Torah,
they're not going to take them as
effectively. Yeah, okay. In the Torah, we have in Halacha, we have a person dies without leaving a will, without leaving any explicit instructions. Then we know the Torah says it's his children, his sons inherit his property, or if he doesn't have sons, then his daughters, and if he doesn't have either sons or daughters, then his brothers, and if not his brothers, then his whatever. You keep on going recursively back as far back as you need to, and the Bechor gets a double portion, etc. Now, this person, before he died, explicitly started handing things out. So suppose he gave more to one person and less to another. Or, for example, he said that the Bechor should get an equal amount to everybody else. Then what he says is valid, because he did it when he was still alive. You can't call it a Yerusha. A Yerusha is something that takes effect after he's dead. Here, he gave it out. He said while he's alive what the disposition of it is going to be in. V'im amar mishum yerusha. But if he said it in an expression of yerusha that they should inherit this or that or the other lo yamar klum, then what he said is worthless, because then he's directly going against what the Torah says. The Torah specifically says that all the brothers are supposed to have equal portions and the bechor gets a double portion. He went against that, so no good. The Torah, exactly. If he writes a document and someplace in it he uses the word matana, whether at the beginning or the middle or the end, for Rashi gives then Dvaro Chayam, and then what he says is valid. Rashi gives examples. He writes, for example, give such and such a field to so and so, and he should yarshin it. So the fact that he uses the word give implies it can be considered a gift, even though he uses the word yarshin as well. But yeah, since he used the word gift, or in the middle, he should yarshin it, and it'll be given to him, and he should yarshin it, or whatever.
If he only used the word yarshin,
then no good. There, Amar Rish Lakish, and Rish Lakish says, "La'olam le'kana." Actually, the person who's bequeathed this stuff is not kona. And she yom a plainu yushu sada plainus shenisatim lahem matana v'yiroshum. That actually, no, he's not kona unless he says, for example, so and so should yarshin such and such a field, which I gave them with a matana v'yiroshum, and they should inherit it. So he uses
both languages.
Yeah. Well, the Rashi points out, Rish Lakish can't argue with the Mishnah, and the Mishnah is saying over there, Ben B'tchil, Ben B'emsa, Ben B'saif. Specifically, that Mishnah is kind of introducing the topic. Then the Gemara goes into a discussion over there, what we can derive from the Mishnah that we have. Suppose the Mishnah was talking about, he's saying to one person, he's saying, let's say, for example, among my children, Reuben, Shimon, and Levi, Reuben should be given this field and yarshin it. Shimon should be given this field and yarshin it, etc. What if it's two different people? What if he says Reuben should yarshin this field and Shimon should be given this field? Do we say, since he used matana by one person, then it applies to the other as well? Or do we say, no, each one is taken on their own terms? So we had Rabbi Yochanan had said that it goes across. Once he says matana by one of them, it applies to all. And Rish Lakish is saying that no, it has to be that the one who was given it has to be said that it's a Yerusha and a Matana.
How can
it
be a Yerusha and a Matana?
One
or the other? It can't be both.
Okay. How can it be both? Because he's thinking of it as both. Whatever it is, but he's thinking primarily as a Matana, so therefore, yeah.
Only
Russia, anyway. Yeah. No, but it's an important Russia. No, but okay, fine. Okay, but...
How can it be both?
Okay. But maybe that's how he does it. Yeah. So then the halacha is like Rish Lakish, not like Rabbi Yochanan.
Halacha
is like Rish Lakish, that's what we're saying.
Yeah.
Case number three, v'idach ditznan, also in Baba Basra, hakosav kol machasav levnoi la'achamoy. So if a person writes in a shtar that from today and after I die, this property should go to my son. So in other words, there's like both. On the one hand, it's taking effect as of now. On the other hand, it's taking effect as of when I die. So ha'aveni yachal limkum v'nation nafkan l'ben. So on the one hand, the father at this point can't sell the property because he gave it to the son. Va'aveni yachal limkum v'nation b'shozav. The son can't sell it because it's still the property of the father. Because it's both, as long as the father is alive until he dies.
But
he's giving it today. It's called mehayom l'acham misa. So what actually happens in that case, and that's what we're going to say now, is what happens is from that point until the father dies, the son is allowed to have the payrus of the produce of that field. He doesn't own the field itself, though. After he dies, he gets the field itself.
Yes. Probably doesn't have to have the payrus to the other people in the payrus.
No, apparently, yeah. It's his. Right?
He inherits his deed from day one.
And the fuel itself becomes his. So the son can't sell the property itself because it belongs to the father. The father can't sell it because the son has certain rights on it. This is according to everybody because of the Mishnah. Continues the Mishnah. Mocharav, if the father did go and sell it, Mechurin Ashiyamusu, then it's still considered sold until the father himself dies, because since the son doesn't own the karka at that point, then the father shouldn't sell it because it's really Bishos HaBen, but if he does, then fine. The son still continues eating the peiros, and then, yeah. Macharaben, if the son sells the property, Ein Lekeach Klum Ashiyamus Av, and the Lekeach is not going to get anything until the father dies. So far, that's the Mishnah. The Itmar, and
the Lekeach after the father dies gets the Karen when the father said that the Karen belongs to the son when after he dies.
So we're saying that if the son sold, then after the father said, what we're saying. Therefore, so the Lekeach can't get the payers at that point, because the Karen still the Karka, not Karen really, the term for it is the Karka, the land itself still belongs to the father. And the son doesn't have the right at that point to sell the land for its payers. So therefore, the Lekeach doesn't get it. And then there's a discussion in the Gemara there. Machara ben b'chaya, suppose that the son did go and sell while the father was alive, and then umesa ben b'chaya, but then the son died while the father was still alive. Do we say what happens to the sale then? Rabbi Yechanan Amar Lekan Lekeach. Rabbi Yechanan says the Lekeach has not acquired anything at that point because the father is still alive. But Rish Lakish Amar Lekan Lekeach. Whereas Rish Lakish says the Lekeach is Koine at that point. He's Koine the Peiris. Why? Rabbi Yechanan Amar Lekan Lekeach because Kinyan Peiris Lav Kinyan Peiris Kinyan Aguf Dami. Rabbi Yechanan is saying when you buy the Peiris, it's considered like you own the actual thing itself. I got it backwards. When the father says Hayyot Malachamisa, what actually happens is that it's the father who can only have the payrus while he's alive, as long as he's alive. Sorry, I got that backwards. Not the son can have the payrus. The father at that point is entitled to the payrus for the rest of his life.
That's the case where the father sells.
Where the father gives it to his son while he's still alive, but he says, "May Hayoyim Malachami," so it takes effect as of now and after I die.
So the father keeps the Peiris, and the son
eventually is going to Yaushin. The son at that point can't get rest. So that's what we said. So, sorry. Let's go that over again. So we said if the father sells it, then it's Mechura Nafshi Yomosu, then it's sold until he dies, meaning the Lekeach is able to eat the payrus at that point because he takes over from the father. Machara Ben, but if the son sells, and the Lekeach Klum Nafshi Yomosu, then the Lekeach doesn't have anything until the father dies because the father is still entitled to the payrus. And the son can't sell the property yet. The Itmar, so now we have the discussion. Machara Ben B'chayav, if the son sold the actual Kauka itself while the father was alive, Umesa ben b'chayav, and now the son died while his father was still alive, which should mean, on the face of it, that the karka reverts to the father, because the son's never going
to
yarshin him.
It belongs to the father all along.
No, it did. I mean, he gave it to his son, so the karka really belongs.
No,
the karka itself, he said, does belong to the son. The payrus states that it belongs to the father.
Karka
belongs to the son at that point.
The son.
But he can't sell it because the payrus still belongs to his father.
The father passes away?
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
We say that the father kept the karka. No,
I got it backwards. I got it backwards when I first explained it. The father keeps the payrus.
The son
has the karka.
And the son has the karka.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now, Rabbi Yochanan is saying loy kana lekeach because kinyan payrus kinyan aguf dami. Owning the payrus is like owning the actual guf itself, the actual karka. The father owns the payrus, therefore it's considered like he still owns the property, and therefore the sale that the son did doesn't take effect. Whereas Rish Lakish says the other buyer does own the property now because Kinyan Peiris lav Kinyan Aguf, because it's not considered like Kinyan Aguf. The father still owns the Peiris, but yeah, the son had the right to sell. He shouldn't have because it's still in the rishos of his father. But b'diavad, if he did, he still has the ability to sell the karka and to have that take effect. Because the father's ownership of the Peiris does not translate into ownership of the karka.
Even if he puts it nine.
If you put it to nine, that's a different matter. But we're talking about without any further tonight. So this is the third case where the halachas like Rish Lakish. Then the Mishnah had said, the Mishnah had talked about Ein Avlad Shor Kayam Afula. The Mishnah had talked about that We said, what do we have? The case over there was that if the baby turned out to be non-viable, we said that then he's allowed to stay married to this Yavama. But otherwise, we said we'll force him to divorce. Yoitzi. What do we mean by yoitzi? Tana mishum Rabbi Eliezer. Tana. We learn in a brayso mishum Rabbi Eliezer amur yoitzi beget. They said in the name of Rabbi Eliezer that it means he has to divorce her with a get. In other words, it was a full-fledged marriage. If we had said that the Yibum hadn't taken effect, then he would have to do Chalutza instead. But at this point in the discussion, we seem to be saying that the marriage actually took effect. A regular case of Yibum, a regular case where the Yavam does Yibum with the Yavama, and then later on they decide to break up the marriage, they do a get. They don't do Chalutza. By the same token, that's what we're saying over here, that Rabbi Eliezer is saying that it means you give a get. Amar Rava, Rav Meir, Rav Eliezer, Amar Rav Achra. It comes out then that Rav Meir and Rav Eliezer are both saying effectively the same thing. Rav Eliezer had Amaran. We said that Rav Eliezer is saying we're not referring to the Yotzi of our Mishnah. Sorry, rather we are referring to what the Mishnah had said. You ain't of Lad Shachayama. We have the case. Let's review. We have the case in the Mishnah. We have the case, the person did Yibum with his Yibama, turned out she was pregnant, and then we have the two possibilities. Either the baby is viable or non-viable. We said, if the baby is viable, there's no question they have to get divorced. He's married Eish HaSachim, but she's an heiress. That's Yotzi. That we're not discussing right now. There's no question that Yotzi. The question is, when our Mishnah had said that if the baby turns out to be non-viable, then he's allowed to stay married, because b'diavad it turns out retroactively that we had the discussion of Yechon and Rish Lakish whether it means at that point whether he needs to do a new bia or not, whatever. Without getting into that now, but the Braisa says that Rabbi Eliezer says no, you can't stay married even in that case. They have to get divorced, even though the baby died or was miscarried or whatever, because you did yibum when you weren't supposed to. Because the woman was pregnant and you didn't know whether she's going to end up having a baby. Therefore, the Chachamim are giving you a knas that you are not allowed to stay married. No, it's different than Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish would say that it wasn't a good Yibum, but at least you have the opportunity to redo it and do a good Yibum after all. Rabbi Eliezer is going beyond that. Rabbi Eliezer is saying, because you did a bad Yibum, therefore the Chachamim are not going to allow you to stay married. Yeah. So that's what we're saying. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Eliezer said the same thing. Rabbi Eliezer hadam aron. We see that Rabbi Eliezer is giving you a knas because you got married when you weren't supposed to. Rabbi Meir, where do we see Rabbi Meir says the same idea? Tanya, we learn in a braisa. We'll have it later. In a few blocks. A person is not allowed to marry a woman who's pregnant by his friend or nursing his friend's baby. We'll talk about it later. Why? Because she may become she may become pregnant on top of the first baby. We learned about this in the first parak. It'll harm the first baby. She may become pregnant while she's nursing the first baby, and then it'll hurt her milk.
She could be pregnant with a second child while she's pregnant.
It's a rare thing, but it does happen. We learned about it in the first parak. It happens nowadays. You can find it nowadays in the medical literature. Also, super fecundation, they call it. It's rare, but it happens. And Rameir says, if you married such a woman, you have to divorce her and you're never allowed to remarry her. Whereas the Chachamim say, no, you should divorce her. When it comes the appropriate time to marry her, after she gives birth or after she weans the baby, whatever, then you're allowed to remarry her. Not Rameir. So we see Rameir cancels them and says, because you married when the Chachamim told you not to, then you have to divorce. Same way over here, even though it turns out, after all, the baby died, and therefore the Yibum should have been a good Yibum, but Rabbi Eliezer is saying no. Abaye says, why? Who says that these are the same thing? Dilma lohi, maybe not. Maybe we can make a distinction. Ad kam lekomer Rabbi Eliezer hacha elamishim de kapaga be'isur eishas achta araisa. You know why Rabbi Eliezer might be machmer over here? Because he was doing something which could have been an isur daraisa, an isur of eishas ach. If it turned out that this baby was a real viable baby, he would have been over on an isur daraisa. Therefore, maybe Rabbi Eliezer is saying be machmer and force them to divorce because he shouldn't have done such a thing.
Nothing to do with the evil.
But over there, with the case of the Mumberis and Nekas, the whole issue to marry this woman is only Drabanan anyway, that you're afraid it may harm the first baby. So therefore, maybe there's less reason to be Machmir. Maybe he would agree with the Chachamim there that you can be Makel. inami, or you could say the other way around. Ad kan lakamer Rav Meir hasam ela mishum derabanan. On the contrary, why would we say Rav Meir is saying to be machmir over there because the whole thing is derabanan? And we find sometimes v'chachamim also chizuk l'divnei yosim mishal Torah. Sometimes we find v'chachamim made their gzeres stricter even than the Torah, because something that it says in the Torah, like an eshes ach, people are not going to get careless with. Something like this, muberes chaveira menekes chaveira, people are going to say, yeah, it's only derabanan, big deal. So therefore, people make it careless with it. So sometimes the chachamim feel the need to strengthen that even more by threatening you. If you do this, you're going to end up never being allowed to stay married to this woman, or never allowed to remarry her. But here, the whole thing is only daraisa. So maybe therefore, people will naturally stay away from that anyway. Maybe the mayor would make it in the case of our Mishnah B'dievet. If he went and did it, which is such an unusual thing, we're not going to cancel him. We'll stop over here because the next thing is a bit of a new discussion about this question of get versus chalitza. So now I'll tell you that thing about Shlomo and the two women. So the Meiri discusses this. You know, when you think about it, there's a famous story of Shlomo and the two women and the baby over there. And what's going on over there, among other things? I mean, so you have, you know, the first she's saying, you know, first each one is claiming it's my baby. Then when Shlomo says we should cut the baby up, and one of them is saying go ahead and cut him up. I mean, what happened all of a sudden? She wanted him. All of a sudden she's saying cut him up. So the Meiri explains there's one medrash that says that the pasuk describes these women as shtayim noshim zoynos, but the medrash says that actually they weren't zoynos; they're called zoynos because like they're not allowed to freely marry anybody they want. They're actually both shomeres yavam. They're both women whose husbands died without children.
According to the Meiri,
the Meiri explains no. This part comes from the medrash. This part comes from the medrash that both of them were shomeres yavam. Both of these women were waiting for needed yibum or chalitza. And there's another medrash that says that their husbands were actually a father and his son, which makes these two women mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. No, the two women are mother-in-law. No, obviously they'd be also to one person, but we're talking in theory each of them could be doing yibum with their respective husband's brother. So what happens? Each of them has a baby. We're good now. Each of them should be potter. One of the babies dies, which means now, on the face of it, one of them might be chayav and yibum. Now, we have to consider the possibilities. Suppose that the baby who survived, the baby, you know, the pasuk says she rolled over on him and crushed him by mistake, the pasuk says, but okay, you know, I mean, still, it's within 30 days, at least it's suffix nafel, at least she might need chalitza. So what happens? Let's consider. If the baby is the daughter-in-law's baby, well, automatically, both of them are potter from chalitza. The daughter-in-law because she has a son, and the mother-in-law because she has a grandson. A grandson also potters you from chalitza or yibum. Whereas if it's the mother-in-law's son, then instead of the daughter-in-law's, the mother-in-law will be potter from chalitza, but the daughter-in-law is not only going to be chayev in chalitza or yibum. She's going to have to wait until this newborn baby grows up to do chalitza or yibum with him, because apparently the assumption is that he was born before her husband died. Otherwise, he'd be eshes ach of Shlomo by law. So what happens then? So Shlomo figures, well, let's find out what happens if I suggest to kill the baby. Well, what's going to happen? The daughter-in-law is going to be very happy with that solution. Actually, she'll figure that's a better solution than claiming it's my mother-in-law's baby, meaning my dead husband's brother. She doesn't want to claim it's her own baby because then she no if she could claim it's her own baby, but actually on the other hand, her mother-in-law is also claiming it's hers. What happens if her mother-in-law ends up with it? She's going to be chayev in chalitza or in yibum. What's going to happen though is the Shlomo figures, let me offer to cut up the baby to kill him. What's going to happen if the daughter-in-law is going to realize to herself, you know what? That's actually a better solution. There's no other brothers of my husband. This is the only one. So then, fine, for sure, I'm potter. There's nobody else to do chalitza or yibum with. And therefore, once he offers that, and sure enough, one of them says, fine, go ahead, cut her off, cut him up, then Shlomo realizes that actually proves the point. It wasn't really the daughter-in-law's son all this time. Otherwise, not only she wouldn't want to have him cut up because of maternal love, but also she wouldn't want to have him cut up because if he's alive, that's what pathers her. On the contrary, when she's saying cut him up, it's because it's really her mother-in-law's child, after all, her dead husband's brother, and she wants him cut up in order to be completely free of the problem of chalitza or yibum. And so it turned out.
Which midrash?
It's two different midrashim that the Meiri quotes. I'd have to look up the sources. I'm not sure.
Three of them.
There's a, yeah.
One, two, three, three.
when I was like 15, 17, 18, 19.